Hi, I'm Panda, and I'll be talking about Netrix, which is a new NFV framework we've been working on at Berkeley. So some of you might already know this, but just to address the big question, what is NFV in the first place? So imagine you go back after this talk, maybe you're bored, and you decide to watch Netflix. You might think that or a textbook would say that what happens is your computer opens a connection to the servers belonging to Netflix, and you send requests and you receive videos from them. In reality, if you look at a modern network, there's a whole bunch of functionality that's implemented in the network that your request is going through. And this functionality is meant to help both with reducing latency, with security, and with other such concerns. Now, these are currently implemented as individual hardware middle boxes that are installed on the network. And as we've got new applications coming up, the number of these has been increasing rapidly. So in response, carriers and network operators and people in industry have this proposal that instead what we should use is commodity servers, similar to what's been happening in the data center sphere and other places, and run these middle boxes as software that is deployed on these commodity servers. And this is called NFV. And NFV is somewhat hyped, like AT&T talks about moving to it. Lots of vendors and lots of ISPs have been talking about it. So why is that? So it gives us some benefits that haven't been around so far. So the first is it really simplifies adding new functionality. All you need to do is deploy some software. It also simplifies developing new functionality and allows like other people to enter the market. It allows us to reuse management tools that were originally developed to manage data centers. And finally, it allows us to consolidate several NFs onto a few servers. And this reduces the number of hardware boxes that are present in your network, and that can save capital expenses and operational expenses for operators. Okay, so along with these benefits, though, before it can be deployed, there are some requirements. So the first is people want high packet rates, which are comparable to what you get in hardware. And this means tens of million packets per second per core on commodity servers. Second, you want to make sure that you have low latency. This is what most people expect of their networks. And the last thing is, remember I showed you that packets were going through multiple middle boxes, and so you want to make sure that even when these functions are implemented on a single server, the packets can still be routed through all of them. And this is called NF chaining, and it essentially just involves replicating a virtualized network inside your computer, which is just like IPC, so it's not that, it shouldn't be hard. Now, there are some challenges that come up because of this. So one of the challenges is in how we should run NFs. And the problem here is that for consolidation, we need isolation. Like, isolation is what has allowed us to run multiple processes for all this time. But this, as I will show you, is at odds with the performance requirements. And the second is, how do we build NFs? So lots of people think to get the high packet rates that we demand, we need to write code, low-level code, and optimize it. And that makes it hard to develop these things. So I'm going to try and address both of these challenges in this talk, but I'll be spending a majority of time on the parts about running NFs and only return to building later in the talk. OK, great. So running NFs. So this entire bit is about how to get isolation and performance. But there's many kinds of isolation. It's been one of the topics that the systems community has been studying for decades. So just to make sure we're on the same page, I'm just going to go through what I mean by isolation. And that way, we won't be promising anything that you don't expect. So one kind of isolation one could want is memory isolation. So each process, this is what processes have given us in Unix and in other operating systems for a while. Each process gets to own a certain piece of the memory. No other process can come and access that memory, right? The second thing, which is given by IPC systems, but is particularly important in the NFV case, is this notion of packet isolation. And all this says is, remember I said a packet could be processed by multiple NFs in a chain. All this is asking is that at any given time, there's exactly one NF that is processing a packet. And finally, we could also want performance isolation, which is making sure that once you've given some amount of resources to a particular NF, no other NF can affect its performance. I'm not going to be addressing performance isolation in this talk. There's ongoing work at Berkeley that looks at this, but it's not in this paper. And you can talk to me in the poster session if you want more information on that. Okay, so if you look at just memory and packet isolation, what is the current solution for doing this in NFV proposals? So the idea is to use VMs, containers, and vSwitches. So for memory isolation, people run each NF within its own VM or container. I'll use these terms interchangeably from now on out. They're just units of isolation for us. And we all know that VMs or containers can give you memory isolation, assuming correctness of the VMM and other things there. For packet isolation, they rely on the vSwitch, and the idea is that when packets are moving from one VM to another, they go past through the vSwitch, which copies each packet and sends the copy over to the next VM. Now, each VM in this case is getting its own copy of the packet. This matches the, this gives you packet isolation. But if you now look at this diagram, A, we are crossing isolation boundaries a whole bunch of times, and B, we're possibly potentially making copies, and this in practice means that we don't get very good performance. So to empirically show this, here's a workload where using a single core on a particular server, we can get up to 25 million packets per second without isolation. Now, if we ran the same workload by placing the NFs in VMs that were connected with OpenVSwitch, which is a popular open source vSwitch, the performance falls to less than 4.5 million packets per second, which is more than a 5-time drop. People in the networking community have pointed out that Open vSwitch is a very general vSwitch and might not be optimized for NFV workloads. So we also used BESS, which is a vSwitch developed at Berkeley specifically optimized for NFV workloads. And this gets you back some of the performance. You go to about 7.5 to 8 million packets per second, but you're nowhere close to the 25 you could originally get. And finally, people in industry and other places love to say that VMs are super expensive. VM exit is known to be an expensive operation, so containers are the solution. And yeah, containers help. They get you to 9, maybe, but they're not really anywhere close to the no isolation case. So NetBricks, which I'm presenting right now and will be presenting in case you missed it, is basically going to give us performance that is identical to what you can get without isolation. So this brings us to the next question, how? And the answer is we throw VM processes, containers out of the window, so everything runs in a single process space. So we've basically thrown out all those isolation mechanisms. And also, you know, the vSwitch was expensive, so we pass packets along just by doing function calls between NFs. And for those of you who are in the network, who have been keeping up with the networking literature on this, one of the nice features of this is it allows us to do run-to-completion scheduling, which means that we can receive a packet and process it through all of its NFs before beginning to process the next packet. And this has been shown in prior work to be particularly good for getting throughput in networking. So this is all great. The question, of course, is, you know, I started this talk by saying isolation was expensive, then I threw out isolation, so how do we get back isolation? Right. So the idea for getting back isolation is that, as we have observed, the main problem here is that every time you're crossing these isolation boundaries between VMs and containers, you're paying a fixed cost. And because NFs support high packet rates, the number of these crossings are very high, and so they're very frequent, and this cost dominates. So our idea is let's use type checking, which is done at compile time, and bounce checking, which is done for preventing memory overflow and underflow errors at runtime to try to provide isolation. And this allows isolation costs to be paid entirely at compile time with some small, like less than 10% impact at runtime for particular workloads. Now, we're not the first people to propose the use of software isolation techniques. So most recently, Singularity, which was published in 2007, proposed it. And in the very ancient days of Xerox PARC, the MESA project had a follow-on called CEDAR, which also proposed a similar model. It's just that rather than applying this to general operating systems, we're looking at a specific use case where we think it's essential to do this to meet the I/O performance that you need. So our approach for implementing memory isolation is reasonably simple and quite similar to other things. We just disallow point arithmetic in an NF code. So this is basically, we force you to live in the safe subset of languages like Java, C#, Rust, Go, and so people are quite used to that. And then once this is the case, prior work has shown that if you have type checks that make sure you can't take an object of one type and transmogrify it into an object of another type, and things to prevent memory overflow and underflow errors when reading from arrays, is sufficient to get memory isolation. The problem is, of course, how to get packet isolation, because remember, the problem with packet isolation is each NF has a legitimate reason to have a reference to the packet and before it's being passed on. And so for this, we turned to unique types, which was work that was recently, that came out a couple of years ago at POP or PLDI. I'm sorry, I don't remember exactly which one. Which itself builds on this on an old idea called linear types. So unique types is this idea that was designed for using type systems to prevent data race prevention. The idea is when a caller calls a function, any references passed into that function become inaccessible to the caller thereafter. So the idea then is only the receiver can then use that packet. So what, and this can be enforced entirely at compile time. So it's a compile time check, it's a compile time failure if you try to reuse that reference ever again. So the idea is we don't run our NFs on multiple threads, but we annotate our functions in a way that we ensure that exactly one NF has a valid reference at a time. So when an NF sends a packet, it loses its reference. And this is exactly the requirement that packet isolation imposes on us. And the good thing about this is it allows us to do zero copy packet IO, which saves us that copy cost and allows us to get the performance that is a performance that is equivalent to what you could get without isolation. And in our implementation, we've implemented all of this on top of Rust. Towards the end of the talk, I'll give out a link to where all the code and other things could be downloaded. Okay, so far I've described software isolation, which provides memory and packet isolation. So one of the nice benefits of software isolation is it allows even better consolidation than what can be offered when using VMs and containers. One of the reasons for the reason for this is very simple. Normally, if you put NFs on the same core, switching between NFs involves a context switch. Context switches, even in a machine which is very lightly contended, come out to about a microsecond, which when you're processing millions of packets per second is an eternity. In our case, it's just a function call, which is a few cycles, so the switch is relatively cheap. It also reduces memory and cache pressure. This is simply because we're doing zero-copy packet I/O, so the working set size for all of the NFs is quite small. Okay, so now let me just cover what we do for building NFs. So currently, when people write NFs, they worry about how to get performance. And the way they do this is they build on low-level abstractions that are provided by libraries such as DPDK or NetMap, which give you things for doing very fast packet I/O, and some data structures which can be used, for example, to get cache-aware behavior. And then you write some low-level C code that puts this all together, and then you find that the performance doesn't quite work out, so you spend a lot of time then going and optimizing your low-level C code to actually achieve the performance that you want. Now, what we observed when looking at a lot of NFs is that a lot of this code is actually re-implementing the same exact pattern. It's just that the pattern works on slightly different semantics, which I will explain in a bit, or in a couple of slides. And because of that, people think that you can't easily provide these as library functions. So our model is to instead abstract these away as operators, which accept user code that can affect the semantics, and optimize these operators. This is similar to what has been done in cases like distributed data processing, where people move from having MPI, where they worried about exactly how to express data spreading, to using systems like MapReduce, where you just assume that the framework knew how to distribute the data out for you. So we have a set of abstractions that I already talked about. They're not very many. They broadly fall into these four categories. And several of them accept UDFs as inputs. So I'll give you an example of one in particular, which we call Shuffle. So the idea is lots of NFs are today designed to take advantage of core scaling. And the way they do this is they receive packets, and there's a multiplexer that is responsible for sending the packets to different cores depending on some criteria. And depending on what you're using, for example, if you're distributing packets according to flows, you might even want to use RSS, which is a NIC feature to do it in hardware. So in our case, instead of having everyone re-implement this every time. We just provide an operator, and the UDF you provide tells us what affinity you need for the packet. So based on your data structures further downstream, you might want to decide how you distribute packets differently. So as an example of something we've built with this, we built a copy of Maglev, which was a load balancer that Google talked about at NSDI this year. And the paper itself spends a lot of time talking about the optimizations they had to do to get their performance. In our case, we re-implemented the same thing by basically copying a consistent hashing algorithm that they had in about 105 lines, which took two hours to write. And we could get performance that was comparable to what Google reported. Okay. So finally, you know, coming to related work, we're of course not the only people working on NFV. There's been lots of work that has come out, including from people in this room. So a lot of the work that has been published has been about how to manage NFs running in a cluster. So examples of these are E2 and Stratos, which look at how to do resource management on cluster NFs. And then there's things like FTMB that looks at fault tolerance for NFs when you're running in distributed environments, and flow tags, which looks at how you might chain them. These are, of course, orthogonal to our work and can be adopted to that. The second set of work that has happened in the single server case has been based on a similar observation to ours, which is isolation comes at a cost. So people have adopted one of two approaches. The first is to give up on isolation. This, of course, gets you performance, but then the question is consolidation doable? And the second is to take VMs and make them faster and tuned specifically for networking applications. The problem here is that the fundamental problem, which is you're crossing all of these isolation boundaries, remains. And so they're a step in the right direction, but networks can give better performance than them. So in conclusion, what I hope I've shown you is that software isolation is necessary for achieving the performance required for NFV applications. And one can achieve these with fairly simple off-the-shelf type checking and bound checking techniques. And second, you know, like performance is not something that prevents us from using high-level approaches to writing programs. We can write programs in a simple manner and make them maintainable while achieving the performance we want. And so the code is available at netbricks.io, and I'm happy to take any questions. Thanks.
Hi, Yang from Shanghai Jiao Tong University. It's a very practical framework. My question is regarding mailbox chaining, how does Netbricks support dynamic chaining reconfiguration?
So the idea is that in our current implementation, when you want to change the chain, you actually pause it and start a new chain on it. So that's the current way. But that's also what most of the other implementations I have found, including E2, seem to do right now. So it's future work to improve it, but that's what we do right now.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.
Hi. So this seems to me a very promising approach. My question is, what about its applicability? In one of the previous slides, I see this relies on DPDK for fast performance, right?
Sorry, I missed that word before DPDK.
It relies on DPDK for fast performance, but not every cloud provider supports DPDK. So what about challenges like this?
Okay, so I rely on DPDK right now because it's a research prototype and it was the thing that was easiest for me to write on. But it's fairly easy to abstract it away as like a platform abstraction layer and switch in some other thing. The question means the cloud support provider needs to support high performance packet IO. Whatever mechanism they support for high performance packet IO, we can adopt our framework to that. It's just not something I've done so far.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks.